Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Podcast. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice. Our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. Well, welcome everybody. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is The Healthy Mind Podcast. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. I have a jam-packed show for you this week. Today, on The Healthy Mind, we are going to be talking about relationships. Oh, yeah. But not just relationships. Today, I'm going to share with you what I think are the three most important words that we can say in any relationship that will make it better. You think you know the three words, don't you? I can see you there. Oh, yeah. You think it's I love you, right? Oh, no. I wouldn't make it that easy on you. Come on. It's a psychiatrist podcast. It's not I love you. But these three words are so important. They're important in our loving relationships, our intimate relationships, our business relationships, in any relationship. We're going to talk about those three words and the psychology behind why they are so important. The top three words, the three most important words that we can say in any relationship here on The Healthy Mind this week. The website, thehealthymind.com. As always, you can always find the information there. Anything we talk about here on the podcast, in health news, on the second half of the podcast, you're going to want to stick around because I have two breaking pieces of news, particularly as it relates to the science of stress. I'm going to be talking about the impact of stress on the physical and on the emotional. We'll talk about right here in Columbus, Ohio, where Ohio State University researchers have found a link between stress and breast cancer. Could stress be a cause of breast cancer? Some pretty compelling evidence. And also, the effect of stress, how it directly impacts us. This is from New York University, a study that looks at how stress can affect our ability to control our emotions. They think that they figured it out there at New York University. We'll talk about all of that. So we're talking relationships. We're talking stress. We're going to do some headlines. I have a great show planned for you today. I'm really happy that you are here. So, are you ready? Let's begin. Okay. Now, as I had said at the top of the program, today we're going to be focusing on relationships. And more specifically, what I want to talk about today is what I believe to be the three most important words that can be said in any relationship and why I think that it is so important. Now, before I share this with you, I think, as I have done this over the years, I think the most important part of any relationship, and really where relationships break down, there's a whole lot of different reasons, and the nuances and the details of each individual relationship is special to that relationship. But when you really tear it all apart, there's really one theme that emerges as to both why relationships make or stand the test of time, and why some relationships just don't make it. And it really is about feeling valued, feeling like you have been heard. Now notice, that is not the same as someone always agreeing with what you think, what you want, what you demand maybe in a relationship. It's bigger than that. It really is about feeling like you are being heard and that you are being valued as a person. There's a whole lot of reasons why relationships break down, communication breaks down, but if you really tear it apart, if you really think about it, it's when we don't feel valued, when we're not being heard. Not that our partner has to agree with us, or a customer or a client or a supervisor or a boss has to agree with us, but that we're really being heard, that we have a chance to get our points across. That's where it breaks down. And that's what leads me to probably the three most important words that anyone can say in a relationship. And those three words are, tell me more. Tell me more. Why tell me more? Why are those so important? Well, think about it. If you say the words, tell me more, what are you saying to that person? On one level, you're saying, I hear you. I hear what you're telling me. I'm not just sitting here idly by and just kind of waiting to speak next. I actually heard what you said. And because of that, I want to learn more about what you say. Your points matter. I am listening. I am here. You matter. Tell me more. Because it validates us. And where I go with it is even another layer deeper psychologically. When we say, tell me more, when we are listening to each other, truly listening, allowing ourselves to be there in the moment with another person, no matter what that relationship is, and care enough both to give them our attention and then to feed back and want to know more about their position, even if we completely disagree with it or don't align with it, it tells the person, yes, they matter kind of on a basic level, right? People are listening. But on a deeper level, on an existential level, you're saying you matter. Literally, you say you exist. And that's where some of the breakdown comes. It isn't just about, oh my gosh, he's not listening to me. He never hears me. He's not listening. He's distracted and all of that. But it's a deeper thing when people aren't listening to each other. To neglect each other, to not pay attention, to not give the impression that they matter, that's what gets to our emotion. That's what gets us angry. That's what gets us upset. And that is how communication and relationships break down. Now again, let me reiterate here. It doesn't matter if you agree with the person. Heck, you could be categorically opposed to what they're telling you, saying, trying to sell you, trying to make you buy or do. That doesn't matter. You are still going to be in a much better place, in a much more compassionate position, and I would argue powerful position in a conversation, if you take the time to truly listen. Because we pick up on that. We pick up on that. How much of what we talk about, our conversations, and the reasons that we act have to do with the exact content of what somebody is saying? For those of you that might be in the sales arena, you know that customers don't buy your product. They buy you. They buy what you are projecting and putting across. If you're compassionate, if you're listening, if you tell them in the way that you run your conversations and your communications that the person matters, they're going to listen to you. Our partners will, our friends will, our family members. But we have to listen. And you can't pull this off in a patronizing way or a fake way. We're smart. You're smart. You know when someone's trying to put something over on you. So when I say, tell me more, you pretty darn well better want to hear more and at least get that across. It's so important. Everyone's got their communication issues. Everyone has an idea of why things break down. And I'm not trying to put everyone into one box, not at all. But if you think about communication breakdowns that you've had in all of your relationships, and really just think about, tell me more, the fact that maybe you weren't heard or that your point was dismissed without anyone even considering it, making you feel like you don't even exist there in the moment. I bet you'll find that in those breakdown of relationships, it ultimately comes back to some form of not being heard, someone not saying, "Tell me more." It's very powerful. It is very powerful. And I think that it goes, again, as I said, to our basic human condition. When we engage someone and validate them by asking them questions or listening to them, the deeper message is that it validates that they exist, that they matter, that they really have something to say, even though we may not agree with it. But that psychology is so important because it bonds people. It bonds them. And you will get the respect even if you are categorically opposed, whether it's an argument you're having with a spouse or a loved one, or a business relationship where you're doing negotiations or a sales call. These things matter. Don't forget the basic human psychology of this. We need to hear each other, and it's a busy world, and we rarely have time, and I know that a lot of us can relate to the fact that most conversations with people are people waiting to talk next rather than hearing what you have to say. But if you start doing that, people will model you. Your relationships will improve. You'll see it. You'll feel it. So that's pretty powerful stuff for three little words, all one syllable. Tell me more. I love you is very, very important too. But tell me more goes to the heart of the human condition and all of those existential themes that I talk about. Tell me more. It is powerful. And when you start doing that, well, things change and you have just taken a huge step down that road to the healthy mind. And now it's time for news. Okay, wow, it was an amazing week for news, particularly on stress science. A couple really big stories, and those are the ones that I chose to highlight this week. The first piece of news, health news, came out of Ohio State University here in Columbus, Ohio, where the Healthy Mind is based. It was an unexpected finding, but scientists there have linked the activation of a stress gene in the immune system cells to the spread of breast cancer to other parts of the body. The headline, stress, a cause of breast cancer? Now, what these researchers found was a particular gene. It's called ATF3, and this gene may be a critical link between stress and cancer, including how cancer metastasizes or spreads to other parts of the body. And that is the leading cause of death when people get cancer. Now, ATF3 had been known before, this particular gene, and they know when it is expressed, okay, when that gene gets activated, it happens during stressful conditions in all cells. Say a cell is being irradiated or it is starting to die, okay? It's not as active as it could be. Turning on ATF3 can cause normal cells that might be stressed to kind of commit suicide, if you will. They shut down and the cells die. Now, the researchers don't know exactly how this happens, but what they think is going on is that cancer cells will trick these immune system cells that have already come there because, wow, there's a cancer here, there's a foreign invader. They trick those cells to start expressing ATF3. Not sure how they do that, but what happens is the ATF3 causes these immune cells, which had come there to destroy the cancer, to start acting erratically and then possibly die, and cancer's got a way out. So it's like the cancer undermines the defense system of the body. Our body is turning against us. Now, according to Dr. High, who's a professor of molecular and cellular biochemistry at Ohio State University, he's also the senior author of this study. if your body does not help cancer cells, they cannot spread as far. So really, the rest of the cells in the body help cancer cells to move, to set up shop at distant sites. And one of the unifying themes here is stress. So we're seeing this connection between the power of stress, emotions, anxiety, thoughts, and how they can literally begin to affect the physical, specifically cancer here. This was also a pretty good study, about 300 breast cancer patients. And Dr. Hai had said that the goal here would be to understand, tear apart this system and understand it even more for the future, because maybe there could be more targeted therapies based on the knowledge of this ATF3 phenomenon. Because in cancer, normally the body, when something invades, is going to go attack it. And cancer can be attacked by the immune system normally. But what happens when it begins to progress? All of this breaks down. And what they're finding is special genes that go in and destroy our own normal cells. They kind of cause a breakdown in those cells, a breach in the wall, if you will, and cancer starts to spread. The power of stress here now being understood in a biochemical way like we've never seen before. All the reason to make sure that you are maintaining the healthiest level of emotional health and well-being that you possibly can. Okay, now this next story, it applies really to all of us, whether it is work stress, whether it is stock trading. Actually, it's pretty interested in the implications of stock trading, or in therapists, where this study was really intended to kind of challenge. But the headline, why stress makes it harder to control our emotions. Now, according to a new study out of New York University, even the mild stress of everyday life interferes with our ability to use healthy coping strategies in order to keep our emotions under control. And what this team of scientists found was that even mild stress can thwart therapeutic measures to control our emotions. This has big implications, particularly in my line of business, my profession, the therapy professions, because it may show us the limits of clinical techniques, and it also shows kind of the new light on the barriers that might be out there that we have to overcome when we are treating people with anxieties and fears. The thinking here is that, yes, you can teach a person cognitive behavioral therapy and techniques, ways to cope. But if stress, even mild stress, is present, people may have a problem remembering those coping strategies and then utilizing them. It's really fascinating. Dr. Elizabeth Phelps, an NYU professor and also the study's senior author, said,
"We have long suspected that stress can impair our ability to control our emotions, but this is the first study to document how even mild stress can undercut therapies designed to keep our emotions in check."
So how did they do this study? And it was a really cool study once you look at it. It was a two-part study. And in the first part of the study, what they wanted to do for the participants was induce a fear response. So how do you do that in the lab? Well, the typical way, the standard way of inducing fear is to show people images of things that are frightening, that are scary. Spiders, snakes, and the like. So they showed these pictures, and at random times, they gave a mild electrical shock while you were looking at these pictures to really heighten that level of anxiety and fear. Now, after they had induced that fear, then the researchers taught them coping skills, cognitive behavioral mechanisms to ease that anxiety down. All right? So you give them fear, you teach them how to get rid of the fear. Now, to the next part of the experiment. They took these individuals then, the next day, and they broke them down into two groups, a stress group and a control group that wasn't going to be affected. But in the stress group, what they wanted to do was stress them. Now, we just talked about how you induce fear in the lab. How do you induce stress? And one of the accepted ways is to dunk hands in ice-cold water. Right? Cause discomfort and make a person feel stressed. And the way that they did this was to make sure that they were feeling stressed was they measured the individual participants' cortisol levels. If you've been listening to The Healthy Mind for any period of time, you know we talk a lot about cortisol. It's the stress hormone. So they wanted to make sure that what they were doing in terms of causing someone to actually feel stress was actually resulting in stress. And these individuals did have higher cortisol levels. No big surprise. While the people in the control group, they just put their hand in kind of lukewarm water, measured them, no stress, no cortisol. And what they did after they checked the cortisol levels was they exposed them again to the spiders and the snakes and the frightening stimuli. But now they wanted to see how both groups used those coping skills and cognitive behavioral mechanisms that they were taught yesterday. And the results were fascinating. Even that mild stress of putting your hand in the ice water undermined your ability to remember and to utilize the coping skills to calm down. Those people who were in the control group that weren't really stressed, they didn't have a problem. They figured out how to calm down. But those that were stressed could not do it. Big implications here, and you can see here, mild stress can affect the way that you think, that you control your emotions. And think about the implications there. Think about the implications in relationships or in the business world or in the stock market, traders and folks like that who have to make decisions and are wildly stressed, and how emotions can swing their decisions and actions. It really is amazing. Now, all hope is not lost, right? People are saying, well, then, you know, why do we learn anything? Why even teach people these cognitive behavioral mechanisms if even mild stress is going to undermine everything? Well, according to Candice Rayo, a doctoral student at NYU's Department of Psychology, she's also the study's lead author, she said,
with practice, or after longer intervals of cognitive training, these strategies may become more habitual and less sensitive to the effects of stress.
So, a cautionary note there for people, even mild stress is going to affect your ability to control your emotions. Because of that, though, and what the scientists feel, you can override that tendency if you consistently do these coping skills, train them, utilize these cognitive behavioral mechanisms, and on a more practical, non-clinical basis, do your exercise, do your meditation, take the time for yourself. Stress can be very difficult, as I've shown you here on both of these pieces of health news, in the physical and also the emotional. The mind-body connection is alive and well. There's just no separating the two. Okay, with the time that we have left, I just want to blast through the rest of the news in a segment I like to call the Healthy Mind Headlines. Okay, the first headline. Study provides the strongest clue to date for the causes of schizophrenia. A new study from the University of North Carolina estimates the number of different places on the human genome that are involved in schizophrenia. In particular, this study found 22 locations on the DNA, including 13 that are newly discovered, that are believed to play a role in causing schizophrenia. The next headline. In the face of trauma, distance helps people find clarity. According to new research from the University of Texas at Austin, the best way to make sense of tragedy is to turn away from detailed reports in the news and social media and adopt a more simplified understanding of the event. Distance in time helps people simplify understandings of these negative events. And finally, what a nice way to end the podcast. The headline, human brains are hardwired for empathy and friendship. A new University of Virginia study strongly suggests that we are hardwired to empathize because we closely associate people who are close to us, like our friends, our spouses, and family members, with our very selves. We're hardwired for empathy and friendship. Can't get away from it. You are so powerful. Well, that is just about going to do it for this week's podcast, everybody. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. The website, as always, thehealthymind.com. Please don't forget, you can sign up for my newsletter right there on the homepage. Just type in your email address and I'll get that information out to you. You can also follow me on Twitter. I tweet at Dr. Zafiridis. That's DrZafiridis. And thank you very much for taking time to rate me on iTunes. If you haven't done it yet and you're thinking, oh, I really should. I mean, I really like this podcast. And he keeps saying, he keeps blathering on about giving him a rating. If you could, I would be so grateful. You have no idea what a couple positive five-star ratings on iTunes does to this podcast. A million thank yous in advance for doing that. Any questions or comments, don't hesitate to email me. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. peter@thehealthymind.com. And for the Healthy Mind Podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Network, I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next time right here on the Healthy Mind.